everyone, and welcome back to The Tea with Crema. My name is Chris, I'll be one of your hosts today, and I'm joined by my best friend, Emma!
Good morning, and happy AANHPI month to all the AANHPI folks that listen to our podcast.
So yes, what an exciting time. That is not what the topic of today's episode would be, although maybe one day. Interesting. Food for thought.
Ooh, that was a good segue.
Today's episode is actually about foods. I feel like we've done food episodes before. I can't remember them off the top of my head.
We did a food review episode. We reviewed all of the vegan restaurants. Mm-hmm.
I feel like we talk about food a lot, especially like in the rapid fire questions. Maybe that's what it is.
It's one of our favorite topics. Food, traveling, and books.
Literally our favorite pastimes. So today's episode is actually about weird foods that we've just accumulated odd knowledges about throughout time and just wanted to share. So that way, the next time you pop open a can of that food, you're thinking about the weird facts that we've shared with you. And you might just say, you know what? No, thank you. Or you'll put it right on the skillet and just have a great time. You know, knowledge is power, and we're giving you the power to choose today. So before we begin, Emma, what tea did you bring today?
I decided that because Japan didn't want to have a spring this year, and we are almost right directly into summer, it is so hot already and so humid, I wanted to drink a peach tea, but I should have drank it as an iced tea, even though it's really good hot. So today I'm drinking a JAF tea. I don't know if it's JAF tea or JAF tea, but it's very good, and it's peach infused into Ceylon. So solid, tastes like peach, would be good as a iced tea. Good as a warm tea too. What are you drinking today?
Today I have a tea called Nuts About You from Tea Head. And this is a tea that has notes of cinnamon and caramel and also features some kind of nutty flavors, some earthy nutty flavors, including coconut, macadamia nut, and almonds. It is a black tea base. It was pretty chill. I don't know if I really got much of the cinnamon or the caramel, but I definitely got the earthier flavors from the nuts that were in there. And it was not my favorite tea, but it wasn't like awful when they spit this out kind of thing. So probably like a 3 out of 5 star tea.
Yeah, solid.
Solid. That's how I describe it. Solid. Not stellar, just solid.
Like it showed up and it did its job.
Precisely. So that was my tea today. Nothing super fancy. But now back to our topics. So I would say we've been kind of chewing on this episode for a while now. See what I did there? So yes, we've been chewing on this episode for a while because I was watching a YouTube video about some random holiday foods and I was disgusted. So it was very bad. Like mostly holiday desserts that people in the 60s were making. Just, I don't know if food scientists were just having a moment and were like, what are things that are food, but not food? And that's what I feel like recipes from the 60s kind of reflect. And I'm just like, and now take this can of aerosol something, spray it out, and then boom, you have a perfect roast. And I'm like, how do you have a roast from a can? And it's just...
That's weird.
It is. It's a weird obsession with the future. And so that's kind of where this episode comes from. And so we've done a bit of research, chosen some foods that are a little controversial or, in my opinion, are just downright gross, and then you learn about them and then you're like, oh, I will absolutely never in my life have this food ever again. And so we're just going through and just sharing what we've learned about some weird foods,
but some foods that I will say that I enjoy. So none of it made me say, ew, that's gross. Some of them did. Most of them made me say, that's really sad and racist. So here we go. We'll have Chris start us off with spray cheese. Oh, awkward.
It's okay. Our tones weren't the same either. We did our best. Thanks, guys. But no, I chose spray cheese because conceptually I thought about it too hard one time and was flabbergasted at the concept of spray cheese. You know, growing up, I don't know. I didn't think about it. I was like, it's cheese in a can. What is there to think about? I'm like, I don't understand. Wait, you put it on a cracker, you eat it.
Okay.
Yeah, I liked it as a kid. I like it as an adult. It's one of the few things. It was one of the few items on the list that even after doing the research, I was just like, yeah, that's probably not good for me. I'm gonna go get some though. And then it is what it is. And so kind of a little history of spray cheese. One of the first cheeses is the brand Easy Cheese, which I didn't realize like is still around because it's one of the first. I low-key thought it was still around because it was one of the cheapest. And so it's a real brand. It's not like the off brand of like Kraft or the store brand. Like it's Easy Cheese. It's a real thing. And so it was really, again, capitalizing on the 1960s fad of like convenience, the future. So look at this cheese. Look what you can do with it. And you just you spray out the cheese. One thing that I kind of like in my research learned is that there's like categories of cheese in terms of like legality.
What? Mm-hmm. What's considered cheese?
Basically. Oh. So there's like, there's a category of like cheese, which is like cheese, like
okay,
traditional cheese that you would think of, like off the block cheese. It just, however one makes cheese, that's what that is. Mozzarella, Swiss, cheddar. Then there's a category of cheeses called processed cheese.
Ah.
And processed cheese is anything that's 50% or less cheese.
What? Please tell me Easy Cheese is cheese and not 50% cheese.
Oh no. Easy Cheese is definitely processed cheese.
No!
It is definitely in the category of there is cheese here. It is
cheese product.
It is cheese product. That's literally one of the legal terms that they call it. It's cheese product.
That's gross.
You can't just call it cheese because it's not just cheese. It's, you know, cheese product. Fun side fact. I knew something was suspicious about this cheese, but now I'm glad that I've confirmed it. American cheese is also processed cheese.
I could tell that though. That makes sense.
Especially like the slices in the singles. Yeah. It's not. No.
Why is it so floppy? Why does it have, you know what though?
So many because questions.
I'm lactose intolerant, right? Like, so, but American cheese and Easy Cheese has never made my stomach hurt.
Because
it's not real cheese.
It's cheese product.
It's never hurt me before.
It's featuring cheese. So in case you were wondering about like Easy Cheese and, you know, like what is it? It's in a category of product called processed cheese, which obviously no one tries to sell it as processed cheese because like, why would you? No one would want to eat that. And so some people like call it cheese food or cheese spread. Like it's cheese flavored. They just do things, cheese product. And so yes, there's, if you ever see things that aren't, it just doesn't say cheese, it's because it's less than 50% cheese. In case you were wondering. Also, cheese spray is not actually technically a spray. It is just cheese spread that has been put in a can. And so I watched a whole YouTube video of someone who like opened the can and like the top half of it is cheese spread. Uh-huh. And then the bottom half is like pressurized air. And I can't do the science because I don't understand it. But basically when you press the little nozzle, it makes the air press the cheese up. And that's what shoots it out of the nozzle. So it's not technically an aerosol. So it's not really a spray. It's pressurized cheese spread.
I don't want to call it that. That's not as fun.
Exactly. Like no one wants cheese spread. Pressure cheese spread. Gross. It's already cheese product. Like you're taking too many things for me. So yes, that's my tangent on spray cheese.
I love that. Thank you for your fun facts and history behind spray cheese. So our next food is... Jell-O is our next one. And if you've ever been in the hospital or a kid and you just love Jell-O, unlike me, I have never been a Jell-O fan. I don't know what it is. I don't like that I want it to be a liquid, but it's a solid. Anyway, there's actually some really fun history behind Jell-O that is not racist, but Peter Cooper was a self-taught engineer, beloved philanthropist, and a presidential candidate. He actually ran for presidency against Rutherford B. Hayes, who we know ended up winning. So Peter Cooper did not win, but he ended up purchasing, since he was like this old money dude, purchased a glue factory in New York for $2,000. Okay. So he purchased this glue factory, which, you know, I'm sure at the time $2,000 was very, very expensive. And there, that's where he decided to produce glues and cements, isinglass, and gelatin. So this is where the history of Jell-O starts. He is the creator of the first edible gelatin that he created from wait for it, collagen extracted from boiled bones, connective tissues, and other animal products. So he decided to take all of the parts that were unusable to most people and inedible to most people, boil it all down, and that's how he created gelatin. So gelatin existed before, but it was never edible. I don't know what exactly its use was, but it was out there. After he couldn't make enough money to like advertise, he decided to sell it to a cough syrup manufacturer who was one of his good friends for $450. So he sold off his patent for this gelatin, and that's the man who actually made Jell-O the craze that we know of today. So there was a lot of things that kind of went into the success of Jell-O, similar to what Chris said about the 1960s and the convenience factor. So refrigeration was one of the big ones that helped make Jell-O popular, because if you've ever made Jell-O, you know you have to heat it up to a certain temperature and then cool it, and it has to stay in the fridge for however many hours. Machine packaging also made it easier to access, because they were able to then put the powder into, you know, smaller packages and into the boxes that we know of today. And then also, funnily enough, the baby boom actually helped it to reach its peak. Jell-O was an affordable ornamental decoration that housewives could make look really fancy, but it was not, you know, it wasn't like a hindrance, like it wasn't a bad thing on your pocket. Like you could easily whip something up and it would look pretty and it would taste good, and you could bring it to your friends and your husband's co-workers' wives who were having babies. So that's some interesting history. Some fun facts is that Utah eats Jell-O more than any other state, which is why I know so much about Jell-O, because Mormons love Jell-O. They love Jell-O casseroles, and they just love Jell-O in general. They also call Utah the Jell-O Belt because of the amount that they consume in a year. It was also served at Ellis Island when immigrants were first arriving to the U.S., which I think is kind of interesting. And then Jell-O also has 22 official flavors. I personally am someone who enjoys the cherry flavor if I am going to eat Jell-O, but I don't eat Jell-O normally. So there's that. Fun facts about Jell-O, though.
I've not had regular non-adult Jell-O in a very long time, and even adult Jell-O is not my favorite. So.
Exactly. It's not my favorite way to consume alcohol. If I'm going to consume adult beverages, I do not want it in the Jell-O form. There's just something about it.
I just don't. And it's always, it's just some really, watching people do it, it's so messy and it's very loud. And just, also the fact that this man bought a glue factory and that's where Jell-O came. Like, I can't.
Right. I mean, I think now, I didn't do the history into like what is Jell-O made out of nowadays, but I do know that that is why some people, depending on where they make the gelatin from, there is vegan Jell-O, or there's not, yeah, vegan gelatin that's made out of agar now, but some people still do the process of the boiled bones, and it's specifically boiled pork, like boiled pig bones. So that's why it's also not halal.
Gross. Okay. Well, love that. I'm going to keep not eating Jell-O.
Okay. Next food is
hot dogs.
Hot dog, hot diggity dog.
Which is definitely one of those things that I ate way more not as a vegetarian, and was very quick to let go of as a vegetarian. I was like, meats I'm not going to miss, hot dogs.
Love hot dogs.
No. No, 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 no. So, you know, all the boring fun facts around, it's a variation of a sausage. And as I'm sure we've all kind of known, like, sausages is a very, like, German thing.
Yeah.
It's very 13th century German. So like the sausages, hot dogs, blah, blah, blah. It's been around for a while. What I didn't realize is that, I guess like hot dogs used to have casings around them to like keep the shape.
Oh, like a sausage. Yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Which again, like makes sense. And apparently the casings used to be made out of sheep intestine because of course it did.
What else are you going to case things in?
What else would be tubular and you could stuff your meat trimmings in? So the main, I guess the main thing is that like, even to this point, that's the big thing, is that hot dogs are still made out of, like, trimmings. And so even if they're, like, beef hot dogs, it's, like, it's not steak meat. It's what's left over from the processing plant. And it just all gets turned into, like, a cute little mushy mush. And that's your hot dog. Which I guess, I don't know. It's just, it's very fatty as well. I didn't realize it was very fatty. And apparently, like, classically, they were very salty. Which I guess also explains why people would, like, really like them, because that salt can be addictive. You're like, oh, I want a little bit more. And I guess my cute little thing is that, like, on once I like did all the research and everything, I was like, oh, the concept or the quote from Steven Universe made way more sense, because he's always saying, if every pork chop were perfect, we wouldn't have hot dogs. And learning that it's because hot dogs are made out of meat trimmings, it's like, ew. So all of the ugly pork chops that don't pass get turned into hot dogs. And that's where hot dogs come from.
I'm gonna still eat it, though.
I don't even know if I want to eat the vegetarian ones now.
Love a good hot... I know it's made from vegetable casing or vegetable trimmings. It's all the parts that are inedible of the asparagus. The part that you're supposed to chop off.
That's what the hot dogs are made out of for the vegetarians. Yeah,
exactly. I mean, if they're gonna, they have to keep the energy. I honestly like going to a baseball game, going to a football game, going to the movies, going to Costco.
Oh, the Costco hot dog.
For $1.50, for $1.50, you can get a hot dog and a drink. You're like, what more could you want in life? I don't know. I really don't.
They lose money off the hot dogs, if I'm not mistaken, at this
point.
They
do. They lose money off of the hot dogs and the rotisserie chicken, because they're banking on you. That's why they put the rotisserie chicken all the way at the back of the store, because they're banking on you picking up stuff on your way to the rotisserie chicken. And on your way back, they're hoping that you're going to get a hot dog. So they're willing to lose money, and they refuse to raise the price point as well. So love that.
I love a company that stands on business.
Yep.
And by that, I mean taking the L. So thanks, Costco, for taking the L so that you can take the dub in other places.
Yes. Okay. Our next one, staying in the, you know, in the field of is it meat or nah, is Spam.
Because is it, though?
It is. Okay, I'm going to tell you something, okay? And it's going to be, this is going to be where all the historical tea is coming from. In a small town named Austin, not to be mistaken with the Texas one, Austin, Minnesota. Okay?
Of course, Austin, Minnesota. That makes way more sense.
In Austin, Minnesota, George A. Hormel founded his first slaughterhouse and meatpacking facility after working in Chicago slaughterhouses. Austin, Minnesota is now known as Spamtown, USA. So Hormel created a bunch of different meat packaging ideas, and not meat packaging ideas, but they would sell a bunch of like canned meats, and that's what they were known for. But Spam is the one that got their like name off of the, out of, what am I trying to say? They got their name out there. So back in the day, and I didn't know this, but in deli cases, you know, when you go to like the, when you go to the supermarket and you have delis and they like shave the meat for you, right? Or even just like in delis, because I think delis used to just exist as it was. They used to have 6-pound pieces of canned lunch meat, canned pork lunch meat. This is the predecessor to Spam. So back in the day, like housewives would go to the deli and ask the deli person for, you know, shavings of Spam, essentially. And it used to come in 6-pound masses. Anyway, Hormel's son, who took over after World War I, wanted to design this like canned product for home usage. So he decided what's better than having it as a 6-pound mass is we could sell it in cans. And that's where he came up with the idea for Spam. So there's a lot of kind of like lore around how Spam got its name. I've always heard of it that it's like spiced ham. Some people say that it could also be shoulder of pork and ham, but no one knows the history of the name. And it's funny because people who call it spiced ham, it's weird because spices and ham are not in Spam. So Spam is actually made from pork shoulder. So it is a real meat. And it was pork shoulder because that used to be considered undesirable. And because Hormel was number one, a businessman first, he wanted to make sure that all parts of the, like, the meat that he was processing was going to be used. So it's also, and then it's kept its recipe until 2009. Pork shoulder, water, salt, sugar, and sodium nitrate. And the sodium nitrate's only used to make it that pink color. And then in 2009, they started adding potato starch. So if you've ever made Spam, you know that when it comes out of its can, it has that weird gelatinous, like, mush around it to keep it fresh. I don't know if fresh is the right word, but they added potato starch so that when you would cook it, then that gelatin like around it would evaporate off. So the potato starch helped it to absorb the gelatin. So it didn't become like Spam didn't automatically take off after Hormel brought it to the market, which like is surprising because it was being sold in the, you know, in the deli section and whatever. But it wasn't until World War II when the US military purchased a variety of canned meats, not just Spam, but people remember Spam the most, to feed the troops overseas. So Hormel doesn't have the exact numbers either, but they believe that they sent over 100 million pounds of Spam abroad. And then it became super popular in the Asian Pacific because it can survive tropical heat and it can be kept on a shelf for weeks and months. Now, this is where like the sad history comes in, because Asians and like people in Hawaii love Spam. Like that's kind of like a staple for us. You know, we make Spam musubis. When you eat breakfast in Hawaii, it's Spam eggs and rice. And that actually comes from like a World War II historical fact. Because during World War II, they couldn't intern all of the Japanese people in Hawaii because there were so many of them, right? You could intern people in California because the population was smaller. But in Hawaii, in order to get over that like hurdle of not being able to intern everyone, they actually put a ban on deep sea fishing, which essentially cut off the market for the Japanese fishermen in Hawaii. And they had no other food to survive on except for Spam. The same thing happened post-World War II in Japan. So like in Japan, the country, and Korea, following the war, people were starving. And because there were all of these sanctions due to the war, Spam was their only source of protein. So when people talk about how Spam is like gross and it's like, it's this like poor people's food, it's actually because of the fact that America didn't want Spam anymore and we're sending it abroad to like those people who lost the war, essentially. So that's why Spam is so widespread in Korea as well. There's something called an army stew, which uses Spam and like sausages and kind of those cheap meats. And it's made in these big stews that are meant to feed like 10 to 12 people because that was the only resource available. Similarly for Japan, after, so they had their deep sea fishing also was banned in Japan post-war, similar to Hawaii. So their economy ended up essentially, you know, plummeting, which then meant that they could only rely on Spam as well. So sad history, but it's out there. Some fun facts. I don't know how I can bring come back to fun facts after that. After the recession in the US, Spam actually saw an increase because it was, again, a cheap protein. And during World War II, soldiers were actually sending hate mail to Hormel, telling him how much they hated his product and that they wished that he would die because they couldn't believe that they had to eat it three times a day. So he had a whole separate PO box just for his hate mail. And some interesting recipes that I saw, you know, from those housewives and those recipes and those ads. Spam upside down pie.
Nope.
Like an upside down cake with pineapple.
Nope.
Still a pineapple cake, but with Spam on top.
Mm-mm.
A Spam.
Does Spam go in cake? That's like asking, does pineapple go on pizza?
Some would say yes. But a Spam bean bake, which is a very popular dish, I guess, in the Midwest for baked beans. And then you would put the Spam on top of it and then put it in the oven. And then lastly, a Spam and cheese. I'm sure it was cheese product ribbon loaf. So people would take slices of Spam and then slices of cheese and they would like make it like for a charcuterie board type thing.
Of course.
Because you can actually eat Spam out of the can. You don't have to cook it. I personally cook it because I think that that's gross when you don't cook it. But to each their own.
How is it edible? I don't understand.
It's just sodium. It's just pork shoulder and preservatives.
Shouldn't you? You have to cook pork.
But it's already cooked. Oh, sorry. I forgot to mention that. It's already cooked.
Oh.
So they cook everything already and then they like
package it.
Yeah. So,
okay.
That's my sad history of Spam.
Love that. I didn't eat much Spam, so I don't have many strong feelings. So, good times.
I have very strong feelings. Okay. Our next food is
meatloaf, which I did research on this one specifically because I hate meatloaf.
I've always hated meatloaf.
My mom also loves meatloaf, and she was very sad because we would revolt anytime she tried to make it as children. So
tell her she can make it for me.
I will. She loves now that she goes out as an adult, and she's like, I'll take the meatloaf whenever we go
anywhere. I do too!
Because she just can.
Anywhere that has meatloaf, I always order the meatloaf. I love that for us.
And she just does, and I'm like, I love that, so it's not for me. But I will say, the history, you know, quick, keep it quick. It is German again. another German dish made it over.
Thank you, Germany.
To America. But yeah. Apparently it's also related to the meatball, which it's like a cousin to the meatball. And
I can see that.
I was like, okay, textually I can understand how that makes sense. Meatballs also aren't my favorite experience ever. So I'm like, okay, cool. That's fine.
Aren't meatballs just ball-shaped meatloaf, honestly?
Basically. And apparently those are like a Dutch invention. But anyways, the American version of meatloaf derives itself from something called Scrapple. I don't know if you've ever heard of Scrapple.
I've heard of Scrabble. No, word game.
This is Scrapple. And so Scrapple is very similar to meatloaf, except that it's all of the things from pork that you don't want to have. Would you like some examples? All the scraps. All of the scraps from the pig. And so it would be, you know, Scrapple would be made from things like the head, or the heart, or the liver, or boiled with any bones that are attached. And it just, you make a broth, and then it just, you take all of that out, and then you mush in the cornmeal, and now you have Scrapple with some seasoning. So that's American meatloaf is derived from.
I would just like to say that, you know, we are just talking about sustainability. We're going to use every single piece of the pig.
Absolutely. I love that for them. You know, you just got to make it work. And I'm sure, you know, once it's in Scrapple or liver mush or meatloaf, you just don't notice. Because, yes, I then looked up liver mush, which is related to all of these. So, like, these are, like, subcategories of, like, this type of food, which is basically just, like, leftover meat product mashed into some sort of bread-like contraption, turned into a food. And so, liver mush is precisely what it sounds like. It is 30% or more pig liver. In fact, it's so specific that you legally cannot call it liver mush unless there is 30% or more pig liver, specifically. And so it's a very North Carolina thing. And in fact, it's so North Carolina that they actually have parties for it. There's
like how people have like chili offs. They have liver mush offs.
The annual Liver Mush Exposition, which started in 1987, is a thing now. Because
I wonder what it just smells
like. Of course it is. I don't even want to think about it. So all of these things, I say all that to say, meat should be meat, not bread. Not bread meat, I don't know. The concept of like meat loaf, meat in a loaf, meat in a bread looking thing, it's not for me. And so that's why I looked up meatloaf, just to confirm if it was all in my head. And it's not, it's actually weird. So fun facts about Scrapple. Liver mush and meatloaf.
Yum.
Still and its distant cousin, the meatball, which is also wild that, like, I don't know, foods have families. So, like, all of these are, like, siblings. And then there's, like, the cousin meatball over there. You're just like, what? And the meatball brings his girlfriend spaghetti. And you're just like, this is wild.
Meatball must be a mom's side cousin. That's not your dad's side. Liver mush is your dad's side.
Then you meet all of, like, the Italian brothers and sisters, the angel hair, linguine, rotini, just all of them. You're just like, oh my gosh, what a fun. Now I'm just like, we should map out the food family tree looking. Like, why? Why are we
part
like this?
Part two. That's our part two. We're going to map out all of the noodles over history, all of the types of wonton / dumplings, because it seems like everybody got a dumpling. Everyone has a casserole. Everyone has a meatball.
Everyone has a thing.
I love that.
So now I turn it back to you.
Four. With. My last one?
Yes.
Yes. My last one. I'm actually going to do a duo. Sorry. It's a mayonnaise ketchup duo because I, and like many other Utahns, enjoy fry sauce, which is made out of both ketchup and mayo mixed together. It's one of my favorite sauces to put on things. So I'll start with mayo first. Mayo actually has no history. Not that it doesn't have a history, but there's a lot of, like, again, folklore, urban legends made out of it. So I think the one thing that people can agree on was that in 1756, there was a duke from Richelieu, I think that's how you say it, who brought back aioli to France after the Seven Years' War. He was serving in Menorca. So in Menorca, there was a sauce called majonesa, which is Spanish, and he brought it back to France where his chef adapted it. But because he didn't have certain ingredients, he used oil, and that's how we got mayo. In 1777, there was a Scottish doctor who received a land grant and wanted to build an indigo plantation in Florida. So in order for him to bring over people from Scotland, he ended up essentially tricking these people to be his indentured servants, and he brought them to Florida. But he knew that because they were coming from, they were going to be in Florida, they were going to have to be people who could withstand, like, the kind of extreme conditions of Florida. So where did he get the people from? Menorca. So in 1777, their indenture was supposed to expire, but his like overseers refused to let the indentured people go. So they escaped to St. Augustine in Florida. And that is where they also say that Mayo got its start. Then let's flash forward to 1920. German immigrant Richard Hellman, which if you all know Hellman's or Best Foods, owned a deli where he sold his wife's homemade mayonnaise, which she brought over from Germany. And people loved it so much that they asked if they could buy like bottles of it. So eventually he ended up selling them, and he would put them in glass jars and put a blue ribbon around it. And that is where we get the Best Foods and Hellman's like blue ribbon mayonnaise. So, and it was perfect. Its jar was big enough that you could put a spoon in it to scoop out to put in your like tuna salads and your Waldorf salads. So that's the reason for the shape of the mayo jar. So depending on where you're from, East Coast knows Hellman's Mayo as Hellman's Mayo. And in the West Coast, you know it as Best Foods. So I've always grown up with Best Foods. And also another fun fact is that mayonnaise is so acidic that it has antiseptic properties and can actually kill foodborne pathogens it encounters. So I was like, oh, that's fun. Love that for us.
Mayonnaise being a medicine.
Yeah. So then, interestingly, on the other side is ketchup. So ketchup was not always made with tomatoes. It actually got its name from Chinese. From around the Ming Dynasty, it was known as ketchup. I'm sure I'm not putting the correct accents where it needs to be. And it was actually made from fermented fish. So fermented fish entrails, meat byproducts, and soybeans, because it was easy to store on long ocean voyages. So what we know as fish sauce is actually the original ketchup. And then ketchup was all over the trade routes in Indonesia and the Philippines, but you know, British people be Britishing. And when they brought it back to England, they decided to change the recipe to what we know as ketchup. So they decided to start using ketchup. But it was funny because in the 1500s, people actually considered tomatoes to be poisonous. So no one was eating tomatoes, but that's because of its acidic properties. When they would eat, they were eating on lead pewter plates, and because tomatoes are acidic, when it would go onto the plate, it would actually leach acid or leach the lead into the food, causing lead poisoning. So people assumed that it was the tomato, not the plate. So that's why tomatoes were, and they were also considered an aphrodisiac, because whatever reason, maybe lead poisoning makes you feel some type of way. Not sure. But then they started to ferment the tomatoes because no one wanted to eat tomatoes because they thought it was poisonous. Then they were sold in glass bottles because, oh, this is like way later, like in the earlier 1900s, they were sold in glass bottles so that customers could see what they were buying. And a fun fact is that 97% of US fridges contain ketchup, and Heinz sells over 650 million bottles of ketchup everywhere in the world. Yeah. So then that's where ketchup was actually, its name means like fish sauce, because that's what it was originally made out of, was fish entrails. So fun facts about my favorite condiments.
Gross. I'm glad I don't really eat condiments. Do I have ketchup in my refrigerator? Yes, but it's not mine.
You are one of the 97%.
That's me. I wasn't for a few years. I didn't even have it. Oh my goodness. Okay, well, final little, it's not like a full story, but if you're ever in the Rocky Mountain region and you see Rocky Mountain oysters on the menu, I just want you to know that it is not seafood. It's actually bull testicles.
Isn't that what do they call it in Texas? Cowboy oysters, right?
Yes, cowboy oysters or prairie oysters. And so just know that, like, it's the Rocky Mountains. And if it sounds too good to be true, it's because it is. They are not oysters. These are not seafood. Do not have your Rocky Mountain oysters. So that was my fun little tidbit to leave off on.
That's hilarious. So note to self, stay away from it. Okay. If you are someone who enjoys hush puppies, I've only ever really seen hush puppies in the South. I think they do exist in Hawaii, but not very popular. I was just recently in Houston with my students, and there was hush puppies on the menu. So my students were like, what is the history of hush puppies, miss? And I was like, I actually think it's a little racist, so I had to look it up, and it was in fact a heavily contested history because people don't know where it actually came from. One of the lores is that enslaved people would make it because it was easy to make. It was just cornmeal and water, and they would essentially put it in their pockets, and when they would escape, they would give it to the dogs that they would set, that the masters or the slave owners would set out to hunt them. So they were called hush puppies, to hush the puppies from finding them. So
that's wild. America's wild. We'll be out here wilding.
And people will be out here finding all types of ways to survive. So I don't know when seafood got introduced to it.
Because it is almost always, almost always seen it with seafood, like as a side with seafood.
Right.
So I'm sure there's more nuance to it. Well, that might be like the folklore story. Who knows what the real one is, but that's kind of like food history in general. Well, that means it's time for our
rapid fire question.
All right, Emma, what is your question today?
If your pet fish could talk, what would be the first question you would ask it? Chris has pet fish.
I don't anymore.
Chris used to have pet fish.
Do you have a question that you would ask a fish?
I also only had fish. I would probably ask it, are you happy?
Oh, getting real existential.
Do you enjoy this life of swimming back and forth? Do you realize that you're only swimming back and forth? Do you wish that you could be in the ocean? I know that was like 5 questions, but I think I'd have a therapy session with my fish. Make sure that they're okay, because I'm sure they've seen some stuff.
Literally. I'd just be like, what's your favorite food?
Do you actually like these fish nibbles? And they're like, actually, no.
I wouldn't even know what to replace them with. It'd be like, ooh, awkward. Well, we could try something else, I guess.
I'd like the hot dog that you don't eat.
Mm-hmm.
What's your question for today?
Have you ever been bitten or attacked by an animal? And if so, what was it?
I have been bitten by Portuguese man-of-wars. That's just like a common thing in Hawaii.
The jellyfish?
Yeah, the blue one.
I don't think they're actually technically jellyfish.
I think they're like a subspecies, like how a squid and octopus are related, but not really.
That's crazy.
I've also been bitten by jellyfish as well. You know, the ocean just be biting you sometimes. I've also been bitten by freaking deer in Nara. Yeah, I'll post that video because they are rude. They are not, I don't know how Snow White was out here singing to them, because they are not happy. So I think that was a bite and attack. Have you ever been bitten by anything?
You know, in Texas, we have ants. So I've definitely, like, I have suffered at the hands of fire ants before.
I
have also, there was a dog that we used to play with. And then, okay, so it's kind of like a funny story, but it's kind of embarrassing and sad at the same time. But it was like a neighborhood dog. So it was definitely like a stray dog. And we used to play with it. And one time we were playing with the Frisbee. And my sister caught the Frisbee. And the dog was trying to get the Frisbee. And we thought that the dog was attacking our sister.
Oh, no.
And my brother and I were arguing about who was going to get off the refrigerator to go get our parents.
Not y'all leaving your sister to fend for herself.
And then, in hindsight, we realized it's because she was holding the Frisbee above her head. And so the dog was just thinking that it was playing a game.
Right.
And was trying to get the Frisbee. And so
I'm dead. Y'all immediately didn't even go to try to help her. You ran away. That is so sad. Anyway,
jumped on the freezer, the outside freezer, and then argued about who's going to get off to go get our parents.
I also have a dog story. So dogs hate me. I don't know why. I love them, but they hate me. And we also had a stray dog that was living on the farm that our family owned. So my cousin and I were like, oh my god, like, let's go play with the dog. It had puppies. And so my sister was like, leave those puppies alone. Like, the mom's gonna come back and she's gonna be mad. And we're like, no, it's fine, it's fine. Like, look, it's so cute, it's so little. Well, dog moms be showing up and be doing what they do, which is protect their babies. So the mom dog came and she was blocking our path to get to the car. So my cousin, who has experience with dogs, and she actually got bit by a dog when she was a kid. She got bit by a pit bull right here on her cheek. And so she's been around dogs. She was like, Emma, whatever you do, do not run away. And I was like, huh? Turned around, immediately ran. All I knew was that I had to outrun her. And she was like, running after. She's like, I told you not to run!
So then you have this mama dog chasing you down the street?
Yes. So then this mom dog was chasing us through the property. And my sister and my mom are in the car. They're in the van. And they are watching us run. And they are laughing. And not only are they laughing, then they lock the door. Because I couldn't see it. My cousin couldn't see it. But the dog stopped chasing us after it reached a certain point. It was just trying to scare us away from the puppies, right? So that's still, to this day, one of my sister's favorite stories to tell.
Same. That seems fair. Checks out for sure. Oh, good times. Well, Emma, where can people find the podcast?
You can find our podcast on Facebook and Instagram at The Tea with Crema. If you'd like to buy us a cup of tea, you can also Venmo us at The Tea with Crema. You can also stream all of our past episodes and this new episode on all of your favorite streaming platforms. We hope to see you next time. Bye!